And the title is The Unforgiving Universe, Semi-Classicality in Loop Quantum Cosmology. Tomas, please.
Okay. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the possibility of giving the seminar here in this series. I'm going to talk about the issues related with the preservation of semi-classicality of the universe. That essentially also would like to clear up some confusion which was created over recent time around this topic. So just to specify the problem, the loop quantization of the isotropic and anisotropic homogeneous cosmological models has led us to some qualitative changes of the dynamics which happened at near Planck densities, in particular the presence of big bounds, and the actually all the simulations, the analysis of the genuine quantum states which were performed have shown that states which were sharply peaked semi-classical at some initial times remained so during all the evolution. So, of course, therefore, we expect this kind of property, like preservation of the semi-classicality, to be robust, to be general property of the system. But just few numerical examples is not enough to establish that kind of general result. So, then we have to ask the question, is this preservation of the semi-classicality really robust? And first of all, I would like to tell that this problem can be, after all, addressed on the genuine quantum level. We can use some adaptation of Monte Carlo method. Essentially, we can make a large population of quantum states. We way of the wave function, essentially trying to cover as much as possible of the entire space of potential solutions, and then just evaluate the evolution of this state, and try to get some relations between the dispersion, say, before and after the bounds. Of course, this method conceptually is very easy. It's quite reliable. But the problem is that it's a brute force approach, so it needs a really large number of time-costly simulations because the space of solution is quite large. So is there any alternative approach to that problem? And the answer is yes. We have several of them. So in this, if system is solvable analytically, one can just find analytically the relation between dispersion at distance, future and past. And this was done, for example, by Alejandro Koichi and Paramprit Singh in context of exactly solvable quantization prescription of LQC, known as SLQC. And the answer regarding this semi-classicality preservation was affirmative. States sufficiently sharply peaked remained so after the bounce. What is the drawback of this method is that these were analytical results, and in fact, to extend them, to repeat them in any different model, any different prescription, we need exact solvability, we need analytical control of the system. Second possible approach is essentially effective semi-classical dynamics introduced by Martin Buchwald and other authors. Its key is to take some number of canonically conjugate variables and then consider their dispersions, their correlations, and higher momenta corresponding to particular powers of these variables promote to operators, and try to moreover, choose them in a way so all these momenta, together with the evolution generator, form closed algebra. then one can write the Hamiltonian equations of motion for all these momenta and essentially cover entire quantum evolution by evolution of these momenta. The problem which this method has is that the definiteness of the system of equations of motion requires that all these momenta stay finite. So, in fact, this contains an implicit assumption that states decay faster than polynomially in both x and t. And then, if we are not careful enough with the choice of the variables, for many dynamical systems, such states may simply not exist if our dynamics is too aggressive. Then, in fact, it may not be possible to either find such states at all, or the sample of these states will be way too small. So, because of all these restrictions, I tried to find some method which is more reliable. First, does not require any kind of solvability, easily generalizable to different prescriptions, to more general models. And I'm going to talk about actually two cases. Please switch to slide 4.
Can I just ask a question about slide 3, please?
Yes.
When you say there is a problem, which is definiteness of the system of equations of motion, what does this mean, definiteness, please?
Well, that we at all can write the system. For example, if some g and n is infinite, obviously we cannot evolve the equations of motion. Also, there is a problem related to forming the system which is, solvable practically. Namely, this set of equations of motion is countable, it's infinite. So, for practical purposes to solve it, one has to cut it off at some finite, to some finite amount of momenta, then somehow estimate that the remnant is sufficiently small, and then find the solution. But the problem is that actually, except for very special systems, evolution of one momenta depends on others. So if some momenta are infinite, the contribution, no matter what we do, is infinite. So it essentially completely destroys the solution. We cannot evaluate even the solution because we have some infinities in the
Hello? We lost you.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Okay. So but you just mean basically by definiteness you meant well-posedness of the system of equations. Is that what you meant?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so let's go to slide 4. So I am going to devise to present the construction of such method, which is quite general and allows to control the semi-classicality preservation. And I'm going to present its work in case of a flat upper W isotropic universe. So to start with, I'll need to specify which model I'm considering. We'll have to present the geometrodynamical and loop quantization because this will be relevant for construction of the method. And then I'll present the application of this method to the case with vanishing cosmological constants, which is the result of joint work with Wojtek Kamiński, which was already published a year ago. The second application, which is a little bit more difficult, it is one, two steps conceptually more difficult, is application to the case of positive cosmological constants. And this is essentially a spin-off of a project of analysis of dynamics of the Sitter universe, which was done jointly with Professor Abayashteka. So, of course, after presentation, okay, I'm going to the let's start with the model. Let's go to slide 5. The flat isotropic universe with, so far, without cosmological constants. So the space-time is just a product of flat free manifold and with Cartesian moving coordinates and real line which corresponds to time. The product corresponds to foliation by homogeneity surfaces. The metric the standard metric of flat universe is expressed in terms of time and scale factor and fiducial Cartesian metric. The degrees of freedom are essentially for the geometry V and V, where V is proportional to the volume of chosen fiducial origin, which represents our universe. Matter is going to be the massless scalar field, which is represented by a canonical pair field value phi and its canonical momentum. The quantization is going to be performed in two ways. For matter, we always apply the standard Schrödinger representation, standard quantization. For the geometry, we will consider two cases. Wheeler-DeWitt quantization, which corresponds to the standard Schrödinger representation, and loop quantum cosmology quantization, where we apply the methods of loop quantum gravity. Since we have the non-trivial Hamiltonian constraint, we have to apply the Dirac program, we have to find kinematical Hilbert space, quantum Hamiltonian, and solution to the quantum Hamiltonian. Please go to slide 6. So let's start with Wheeler-DeWitt quantization. All the elements of the system are expressed in terms of four canonical variables, P, P, phi, and P phi, where P corresponds more or less to the volume of the fiducial cell to power two-thirds, P is canonical momentum. Then the kinematical Hilbert space is essentially product of two standard square integrable Hilbert spaces with the inner product is measured even respectively by dV for gravitational part and dPi for the matter part. Basis is given by the eigenstate of operator P and phi. All the canonical variables are promoted here to the operators. And quantum constraint is essentially type of Klein-Gordon equation, where on the left-hand side we have second order derivative over phi, and on the right-hand side we have minus certain positive definite operator, which in case of Wheeler-DeWitt here, it's essentially the second order derivative of the logarithm of phi. The physical state, of course, this operator has the continuous spectrum, which is entire positive real line. And physical states are represented by the similar, of the similar form as solution to Klein-Gordon equation. This is just integral over real line, of case, of some spectral profile, phi tilde of k. Producted with the eigenfunctions of theta underscore operator and rotation by phi, e to I omega phi. The eigenfunctions of theta are essentially of the form 1 over square root of phi times rotation e to I k logarithm of v. Observables which we are going to use are the scalars with momentum, which is constant of motion, and in k or omega variable, it's essentially a multiplication operator. And the logarithm of v at given phi operator, which corresponds to essentially calculating the standard way in v representation logarithm v or observable on some initial data slice at phi equals to zero. And the dynamical results are the following. We have two classes of solutions. Please go to the slide 7. Ever expanding and ever contracting. And what's important about the behavior of the wave packet is that for every wave packet which contains just incoming or just outgoing plane waves, the dispersion of logarithm of v is constant. It doesn't change during the evolution. This will be a crucial property which we'll use to construct the method of estimating the dispersion growth. So please go to slide 8. LKC quantization is quite similar. However, right now, the geometry is quantized by polymeric methods. Quantization is kind of standard one. The kinematics is the following. The geometry space, essentially, the kinematical hyperspace is again product of gravitational and scalar field spaces. The geometric space is more quantization. The basis is built out of normalizable eigenstates of V, which are eigenstates of the operator. And basic operators are essentially holonomies and fluxes. The constraint resulting from it is a different is again of Klein-Gordon type, where evolution operator theta, an analog of theta underscore, is a difference operator with coefficients essentially proportional to v square. And physical states are again represented just by the integral over k, representing essentially the frequency of the spectral profile with appropriate product of eigenfunctions of theta and rotation in time, e to I omega phi. Dirac observables are analogous to Wheeler-DeWitt ones, and the dynamics we already know in, please go to slide 9, we have this behavior of agreement with general relativity for low energy regimes and bounds at high energy regimes. So please go to slide 10. What is important about the structure of physical Hilbert space in loop quantum cosmology case is that because the coefficients of the difference operator, the evolution operator theta, are real, the are essentially, furthermore, we can observe that each eigenfunction of this evolution operator converges for large v to some combination of ingoing, of incoming and outgoing Wheeler-DeWitt eigenfunction, Wheeler-DeWitt plane waves, which are composed in such a way that they form the standing wave. And it's symbolically, it's expressed as psi of k is equal sum r of k, sum non-trivial phase times eigenfunctional Wheeler-DeWitt operator plus exponent of opposite phase and Wheeler-DeWitt eigenfunction corresponding to opposite k moving in wave, plane wave moving in opposite direction. Furthermore, one can make a comparison of Wheeler-DeWitt and LQC norms, definitions of the norms, and apply self-adjointness of theta to explicitly find the normalization factor R, which in this case is 2. More detailed explanation of this is provided in the appendix at the end of this slide, at the end of this presentation. This property can be confirmed analytically. And it can be done by using so-called transfer matrix. And it's done in the following way. First, we reformulate the second-order differential equation for the eigenfunction in its first-order form. So essentially, we have to write it as a vector equation. Then we locally, at each consecutive pair of these, decompose terms of Euler-Deret ones, write entire equation, different equation, as equations for the coefficients in this decomposition. And exactly the matrix form of this equation, its first order form, is so-called transfer matrix. We can analyze it asymptotics. And then what we obtain are exactly is exactly the convergence relation which is written in the second point, in the second red bullet. What is non-trivial here are the phase shifts, because they have actually quite some non-trivial properties, and they can be analyzed analytically, and at least in one case, in SLQC case, and one can show that the phase shifts are essentially proportional to some product in the leading order, product of k and logarithm k. Of course, some subleading terms were also determined. And its first order derivative over k is essentially minus logarithm of k. These results can be confirmed for different prescriptions, because there are several prescriptions in LQC which differ by choice of the Laplace function, choice of factor ordering. So for different prescriptions, they can be confirmed numerically. And the final result of this comparison is that the first order derivative is essentially minus logarithm of k plus some terms vanishing like 1 over k squared. And scaled second order derivative, k times second order derivative, is bounded, its absolute value is bounded by 1. Important property. Let's go to the slide. Here we have actually plot of the phase shift of first order derivative of the phase shift for different prescriptions. In next slide 13, we have the plot of the scaled second order derivative. We see that it is actually bounded by its absolute value is bounded by 1. Please go to slide 14. So these properties can be used to construct quite nice relations between geometrodynamical space, Euler-Deret space, and the quantum cosmology space. Because right now we can build a simple mathematical relation between Euler-Deret physical state and the quantum cosmology physical state, just replacing the eigenfunction, LQC eigenfunction, by its Euler-Deret limit, which is this combination of two plane waves forming standing waves. And in the first bullet, this transformation is written explicitly. It's exactly rotation by phases, and then composition of two plane waves. That's why k actually appears twice. So here is the transformation between spectral profiles, which is the rotation by phase, and then unification of profile of k and profile of minus k. So essentially, we have two components which can be extracted by multiplication by Heaviside function of plus k and minus k. So we take two components for positive k. And this component has quite nice property. Namely, we can, for this Euler-Deret, essentially these two components are Euler-Deret wave packets. So we can apply our observables constructed for Wheeler-David theory, also to the full physical space, we can apply observables constructed for LQC. And then one can show, this proof contains several steps, but it's not very, very difficult. And it's provided also at the end of this presentation in one of the appendices, if anybody is interested. What one can prove is that the limit of LQC of the both expectation values and the dispersion of logarithm of phi observables for LQC for phi going to plus infinity and minus infinity are equal to the observables and dispersion, analogous observables and dispersions of this component Wheeler-David state. And we remember that for Wheeler-David state, especially for this component state, this dispersion is a constant, so it's denoted here as sigma plus minus. So we can actually interpret the global evolution of the LQC physical state as a kind of scattering process. Please let's go for a moment to the next slide, slide 15. So we have here the wave packet, which is Wheeler-David incoming wave, which comes from infinity, and it corresponds to the incoming component of the Wheeler-David limit of LQC state. So we can think about it as some geometrodynamical wave packet incoming from the infinity in sense of the configuration space, not the space on itself. And then it's actually the wave packet, the true wave packet, is evolved by LQC evolution, which is here denoted as green wave packet. And then, once this packet is reflected by the bounce, again it enters classical trajectory and then approaches some Wheeler-David outgoing wave packet. So it's exactly the outgoing component of the Wheeler-David limit. And we can think about this entire picture as some incoming Wheeler-David wave packet, which is reflected by the discrete dynamics into outgoing Wheeler-David wave packet. And then we can ask for comparison of properties of this incoming and outgoing wave packet. Let's go back to slide 14 for a moment.
Thomas, can I ask a question? So
yes?
In this figure, it's a very nice question. Why, if you look at the incoming and outgoing wave packets of the Wheeler-David, why do outgoing wave packets have a much larger width than the incoming wave packet?
Well, this is just a matter of choice. I mean, for this particular plot. We have to remember that the equations, evolution equations, are symmetric with respect to reflection in time. So we have as much solutions where the dispersion is bigger for the outgoing, as much, we have as much many solutions where the dispersion will be smaller.
Okay.
Here we have some, we see some growth which is quite scary, quite big, but we have to remember that this state was chosen to illustrate the mechanism. So in fact, the state used for this simulation was never semi-classical.
I see.
So it has very huge spread in scalar field momentum, so it cannot be used for analysis of semi-classicality preservation. I mean, it does not give correct answer for semi-classicality preservation because it was never semi-classical. So it's just to illustrate the mechanism.
So the outgoing wave packet here does not correspond to a macroscopic universe at late times?
No, it does correspond. But the problem is that for any real, more reasonable data, I would have to choose states which are very sharp, sharply peaked in the momentum, which is the constant of motion.
Okay.
And then the difference between spreads would be much smaller, and potential difference would be much smaller. It can be even negative. So that's exactly the conclusion of the first part of this talk, which I will be talking about in a few minutes.
Okay, so this is just an illustrative plot. It does not reflect that this state is actually sharply peaked.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so let's go back to slide 14. And then I, in the fourth bullet, I actually wrote precisely the mathematical form of the scattering picture. Essentially, we had some incoming Clairdelis state, which is transferred into our outgoing one by some scattering matrix. Matrix can be actually found here and given in terms of rotation. That's why right now I spent some minutes to analyze their properties. Furthermore, the entire transformation between incoming and outgoing wave packet can be considered as action of unitary operator, which corresponds to the total reflection of wave packet composed with rotation by alpha twice. So this is the most important element of this picture. Let's go now to slide 16, the dispersion graph. So right now we can apply exactly the scattering picture to compare the dispersions of logarithm of V at distant future and past. So first of all, let us notice that for Wheeler-DeWitt case, the logarithm of phi observable, logarithm of V at given phi observable, can be expressed directly in spectral space, in space of space, as the derivative operator minus some function, which is essentially third-order derivative of omega of k. But because omega was proportional to k, going to be some physical constant, square root of 12 pi g. So the relation between action of this observable on the limit, plus and minus, can be written again in terms of this U operator, because essentially this U operator corresponds to transformation between psi minus and psi plus. It's written in the second bullet. Therefore, this dispersion, for example, at the outgoing state of this operator is going to be the dispersion of the operator for incoming state composed with U minus 1 and U, where U is again, this rotation by phase. And we see at the last line of the second bullet that this composition of operators has a very simple form. It's the original derivative over k minus the identity times 2 first order derivative of the phase shift. Then, applying very general Schwarz inequalities to the distortion, essentially estimating the dispersion of sum of operators, we see that the dispersion of the incoming wave packet is less or equal the dispersion of the incoming operator plus 2 times dispersion of this derivative of phase shift operator. This last dispersion can be estimated actually by dispersion logarithm of V. Because, first of all, the dispersion itself is just the action of the square operator minus its expectation value squared. I'm afraid there shouldn't be square near a alpha prime. From above by the difference taken from any arbitrary point, which may be the same as the value corresponding to expectation value, but may be different. And then if we choose as this arbitrary point, the point corresponding to the peak, to the expectation value in k or in omega, we can estimate this entire dispersion by the dispersion of the operator logarithm of k, which is denoted by sigma star square. So in consequence, we obtain the final inequality where the dispersion of logarithm of phi, logarithm of v at given phi, for the outgoing state is bounded from above by dispersion of the incoming state and twice the dispersion of the logarithm of k, which is the constant of motion. And we remember that this dispersion of the incoming and outgoing state corresponded to the limit in phi equal to minus infinity and phi equal to plus infinity of the actual real expectation values and dispersion of the the dispersion of the incoming and outgoing state corresponds to the limit in distant future and past of the dispersions of the real LQC observables. So, in fact, please go to slide 17. We can summarize that we devise the method of comparing the properties each state. The method which is based on analysis of the scattering of the geometrodynamical state by LQC dynamics. This method does not require exact solvability. We don't need to have analytical control. A lot of properties were just derived numerically. It uses only asymptotic properties of the physical Hilbert space basis. Essentially, what was important for us was the Euler-Debye limit of eigenfunctions and appropriate sufficiently fast convergence. It's general. We don't put any restriction to the shape of the state and assumptions of Gaussianity, nothing like that. The only mild assumptions which enter there, which I forgot to tell, is that we require that actually dispersion of the state in scalar field momentum defined has to be finite. And that's enough. This method is genuinely quantum. We don't use any semi-classical approximations. We just work with full quantum state, with all the elements of physical Hilbert space. So this method, when applied to to isotropic universe with massless scalar fields, allows to find general triangle inequalities between the dispersions of logarithm of v at given phi, and this inequality is strict and forms strict upper bound on eventual dispersion growth. And here I would like to comment that it's just finding the upper bound on the dispersion growth if it happens. It doesn't say anything that it has to happen. In fact, we have a lot of examples of the states where the dispersion has I think that because of these triangle inequalities, which are very sharp, very strict restrictions on possible dispersion growth, the universe's memory is indeed extremely sharp. So state which was semi-classical in the distance path before the bounce, state semi-classical in its distant future. So this same method can be immediately applied to isotropic sector of the anti-1 system, and in slightly weaker version, it was used in one work with people from Madrid, with Mercedes Martin Benito and Guillermo Mena Marugan, to analyze semi-classicality preservation of the vacuum, the anti-1 state. And of course, this method is possible to generalize to more complicated systems. In this case, I will show the example of the system with positive cosmological constant in the second part of the talk. So please go now to slide 18. So let me briefly specify the Wheeler-DeWitt model with positive cosmological constant. Essentially, all the kinematical structure is the same. The only difference is that the evolution operator theta right now has an additional cosmological term, which corresponds to the negative V square potential. Unfortunately, I see that I have a typo. In the cosmological term, there should be additional multiplication by V square. Here, we have a little bit of additional physical constant. Delta is essentially area gap. It's first non-zero eigenvalue of area operator. Gamma is Barbero-Mirsky parameter. So what is relevant about the evolution operator theta lambda is that it admits a one-dimensional family of self-adjoint extensions. By itself, it's not self-adjoint. These extensions are labeled by the elements of U1 group, essentially, when I say they are labeled by phases. And each extension has the continuous spectrum, and the spectrum of positive part of the operator covers entire positive real line. The physical states are of the very same form as the states for case lambda equal to zero. The only difference is that case wave numbers just cover positive real line, and the eigenfunctions of theta are given as compositions of the Hankel functions of imaginary order. And these functions essentially, again, form a kind of standing wave. What is also quite peculiar here is that for each extension are the basic elements of this extension have common asymptotics, namely, for large V, the function converges to 1 over V times cosine of some omega, which depends only on cosmological constant times V, plus some phase shift, which is a function of some the label of the expansion. And this limit is common to all the elements of the Hilbert space base corresponding to that dimension. So let me just say something about the dynamics. The space follows the classical trajectory up to one point. Let's go to slide 20. Let's skip two slides. So it follows the classical trajectory, but classically this system has very dangerous property that essentially volume reaches the infinity at the finite time, for finite pi. In this case, on this plot, it's for pi equal to zero. So what is nice about the classical trajectory is that it can be analytically extended beyond this point. And if we do it sufficiently carefully, we see that in fact the trajectory reflects from the infinity and corresponds to the contracting universe. So we have some kind of reflection from the infinity. That's why Wheeler-DeWitt eigenfunctions had the standing waveform. So let's go back to the slide 19 for a moment to say something about the observables.
Sorry, Tomasz, what was on the x-axis?
Well, essentially it was some function of volume. I will explain it in a moment, what it exactly.
Okay.
Because it requires some additional information. So let's just know that, let's just remember that point equal to x equal to pi over 2 corresponds to v equal to infinity. This is slide 19. So the observables, which are used for description of essentially same as in case of vanishing cosmological constants, we have, however, some problems. Namely, if we directly try to construct analog of volume at a given phi, or even logarithm of volume at a given phi, we realize just because of this classical property of reaching infinity at the finite time, this operator reaches, leads us outside of our physical Hilbert space. So it's not really a good observable. And for example, that amounts to a little bit of a problem once we try to use the semi-classical analysis, which is tied to, for example, variable V. Namely, one can see that if one selects the canonical star V and its canonical momentum V, and then requires the dispersion correlation higher momenta all to be finite at some open interval in phi. That implies that essentially the expression, which is integral of spectral profile with some weighting function, and integrated with the rotation in e to I omega phi, essentially it is a Fourier transform, we see, that it has to be zero on the interval, on the open interval. This is the direct consequence of the fact that all the basis elements of the Wheeler-DeWitt physical space have this very very same asymptotic as large V. Essentially, each composition of the basis function produces this. Let's go back for a moment to slide 18 and to the last equation. We see that each basis drops the limit cosine of V over V. And this is a common function, one function for all the basis elements. So if we construct any space, it will always have this very same limit. So we see that it immediately implies that the momenta involving V operator will be infinite, starting from some n, unless the wave function is such that after integration of the spectral profile, this coefficient in front of the limit is actually zero in some open interval. So that's exactly where this Fourier transform condition on the slide 19 appears. And then we see that actually this is a Fourier transform of some function which is zero on some open interval. And we can apply some properties of Fourier transform, which essentially one can use proofs similar to the ones used for proving the behavior of the transform of the function of compact support. The ideas are essentially the same. And one can see that the spectral profile with the weighting function and since the behavior of the weighting function can be actually measured, we can identify in n behaves like square root of k, that amounts to the situation that if we want the finite moments in V, spectral profile has to behave like k to minus 3 half, and that immediately implies that the dispersion of the momentum of the scalar field is infinite. So such states are not semi-classical at all if we consider all the degrees of freedom which are involved. The situation is a little bit worse because we know that even in case of positive cosmological constant, the Wheeler-DeWitt evolution admits the epoch where the evolution is almost like evolution of the system with zero cosmological constant. It's kinetic dominated epoch, where essentially it is Klein-Gordon equation in logarithm of V. Therefore, the dispersion in scalar field momentum directly transfers into this portion of the canonical momentum B, which then is infinite. So we see that actually B building states which behave well in both B and B for this particular dynamics is impossible. So that requires a little bit of curve. Fortunately, there is a way, there is a solution for that. There are actually two solutions. First solution is to compactify V, namely instead of V itself, use some function which has finite value at infinity. Here we use some function which is theta A, which is Quercus tangent of V divided by some constant A, which is chosen arbitrarily. So we construct family of the observables.
Sorry, this is, I have a question. This A is arbitrary or this A is same as you introduced just two slides back?
Oh no, the idea is that we choose some value of A and then construct the set of observables. And there are no restrictions on how to choose this A.
Okay.
It's like we can, for example, construct observable B at given phi, but also we can construct observable 2V at given phi, 5V at given phi. So this is the same kind of dependence on the parameter here.
Okay.
It's just choice is matter of convenience. Other possibility is just to use the quantities which correspond to really measurable quantities in cosmology, which are Hubble parameter or energy density. So let's go to the slide 12 again. We see that here exactly the evolution, physical evolution of wave packets was expressed in terms of the observable theta, this arcus tangent, and we see that space expands out of Wilbank singularity, hits the infinity or theta equal to pi over 2 at some phi, and then reflects back into the crunched singularity. If you go to the slide 21, we actually can observe the behavior of energy density, which then drops from infinity at Big Bang, reaches the density corresponding just to cosmological constants, so pure the Sitter phase, where it reflects, and then goes back to infinity at Big Crunch singularity. So let's go to the slide 22, where we can analyze the LQC model dynamics. And we can see similarity, namely the operator is again modified by negative d square potential. Again, I'm missing d square in terms of the cosmological term here. What is important is that theta, lambda, the real evolution operator now, admits a one parameter family of self-adjoint expansions, again labeled by U1 group elements, but each extension right now has this discrete spectrum, and the spectra are disjoint. Furthermore, one can actually find analytically these spectra that are given by the function, by the relation, implicit relation in the third bullet, where functions G, F1, F2, the one in green, are complicated, they are elliptic integrals, but they are known, they are determined. And important property is that very quickly the spectrum of each extension approaches uniformity. It's uniform up to one term, which drops exponentially with n. And it's not only a remnant of some order, it is really bounded by some exponential function, just by this implicit relation. Physical states are again just discrete sums of eigenstates of theta operator rotated in time with some spectral profile, psi tilde n. Again, we have the similar leading order asymptotics for each eigenfunction, for each extension. We have 1 over v cosine some omega of lambda v plus for the extension. It is common for extension, all the functions have this limit. Dynamics is as we expect. Let's go to slide 23. Well, if we use again this theta of variables, we observe that if we start from contracting universe, we go till the bounce, where the universe bounces back into the expanding one, then goes to pure the heater phase, reflects from infinity or from theta equal to pi over 2, into, again, contracting one, bounces back, and so on, into infinite chain. If we go to slide 24, we'll see actually the behavior of the energy density with, again, quasi-periodic behavior of bounces reflections from infinity. So the minimal value here corresponds exactly to energy density corresponding to the cosmological constant on the left. Right corresponds to the total energy density equal to the critical one. Essentially, what is quite nice property is that the energy density operator itself has bounded spectrum, so we actually can never exceed these bounds which we observe. So let's go to slide 25. Now we have a little bit more difficult task than in case of vanishing cosmological constant. But again, we can analyze the transfer matrix asymptotics. Try to find not just the leading order correction, which was found, which is the purple one here, but also the first sub-leading order. See that it is some pi kappa, depending also on n or on of 1 over times 1 over v. So what is important right now is that since 1 over v is proportional to theta minus p over 2, this component will be regular in compactified variables. From the properties, from the convergence requirements of the transfer matrices, we can actually find the both capital omega and kappa, and it's given just in the second part of the first bullet. Problem is, a little bit of non-triviality, that kappa is proportional to, in the leading order, to omega squared. This expression here is exact. In leading order, I mean that it's A omega squared plus B. This particular property, this fact that we have this sub-leading order term, allows us to construct some nice limit spaces at theta equals near the region theta equal to pi over 2. Because again, we have standing wave form of the eigenfunctions of LQC evolution operator. We can split them onto incoming and outgoing components. For each component, either only incoming or only outgoing, the leading term limit is just a global rotation because it is common for the entire expansion. So only the subleading term will be relevant. And these subleading terms form the wave packet, more precisely the Schrödinger wave packet, which is regular in theta. So we can use this list to analyze the expectation values and dispersions of theta. So, similar way, we define the transformation between LQC and Wheeler-DeWitt spaces in vanishing lambda case. We can define here the transformation onto the transformation between the actual physical Hilbert space of LQC and the Hilbert spaces corresponding to the limit spaces. Wave packets will be essentially the same up to some weighting function, which is global, which is known analytically. We just can fix it to have some convenient properties later. So let's go to slide 26. The same limiting spaces, it's Wheeler-DeWitt limit space, the same limit spaces can be built also in Wheeler-DeWitt system. here, because we don't have this transfer matrix method, it's differential equation, we use a little bit different techniques. Namely, we just take the limit with mass gap going to zero, and then by requirement of the uniform convergence required to actually establish the result, we have to allow for some kind of flow of the cosmological constant, and we can take the limit as delta going to zero, and we see that actually LQC state will have the Wheeler-DeWitt limit in certain sense, namely each eigenfunction has Wheeler-DeWitt limit, but for the Wheeler-DeWitt system corresponding to a little bit different cosmology. And the relation between cosmological constants LQC Wheeler-DeWitt limit is given just above the second red bullet. Again, as in LQC case, we can construct the relation between the limit spaces and the actual physical spaces of Wheeler-DeWitt space. What is important here is that if the wave packet, either the limit one or the Wheeler-DeWitt one, it doesn't matter because it's symmetric, if one is sharp-critic about theta equal to pi over 2, then the dispersion of Wheeler-DeWitt wave packet and these limit states are approximately equal. They are equal up to some higher order, much higher order corrections, which are coming just from this gray remnant in the limit of Wheeler-DeWitt wave function O of V to minus 3. So let's go to the slide 27.
So can I ask a question?
Yes.
You said like you want to consider a wave packet with a sharpened peak at theta equal to pi by 2. So this, what you mean is that it is also peaked in its conjugate variable? And if yes, then...
No. I just need sharpened peak in this one variable because I'm just using it to compare the dispersion.
Okay.
So just this one variable is enough.
Okay. Thanks.
Just to build a relation between this observable of Wheeler-DeWitt and limit, we don't need it. I mean, once we allow for spread, we just have to correctly estimate the relation, and for that some numerics is required to bring it here. Okay, so let's apply the construction of the limiting statement. Namely, if we consider the continuous limit, we identified the relation between physical Hilbert spaces of LQC and Wheeler-DeWitt with their appropriate limit space. And because all these limit spaces are essentially spaces of solutions to simple Schrödinger equations, they are Schrödinger wave packets, we can get relations between them. So using these three relations, we can build the relation between physical Hilbert spaces of LQC and Wheeler-DeWitt spaces. But we have the problem. LQC states are discrete in the sense of the spectrum. Wheeler-DeWitt are continuous. So if we just identify naively the spectral profiles, we'll produce zero norm Wheeler-DeWitt space. So it doesn't work. It will not give us any useful answer, any useful tool. So what to do in this case? So we can introduce something which I don't know whether correctly I call the instantiation. The idea is that we can fix some moment phi equal to phi zero. So just to simplify the calculations, we can actually shift this phi zero to zero by appropriate rotation of the spectral profile. And then we can consider, for example, the operator on the limiting spaces of Wheeler-DeWitt corresponding to essentially theta minus pi over 2. So my pure the theta phase happens at 6, just to simplify the calculation. And then what is important is that in space, this operator has very simple form in terms of the omega in the representation of k. It's essentially derivative over omega divided by omega times imaginary unit and time constant. So it's very easy to handle analytically. On the other hand, in the limiting spaces of LQC, we have a little bit more complicated task, because we have to construct also some analog of x or theta minus pi over 2. But because of the discreteness of the spectrum, we cannot just construct the operator x directly as some very nice local operator in space of k. But what we can do, we can approximate it by some sine dx over c operator. These approximations can be made better by taking higher order, some higher power of trigonometric functions. Here is just the first order attempt. Then this operator can be expressed again by some multiplication or division in this case by omega and appropriate composition of the spectral shift operators h and h minus 1, where spectral shift operators just shift the spectral profile by 1 in the position. So what is important that because, as we remember, the spectrum of the evolution operator approach regularity very quickly. It's regular up to some relevant deviation which decays exponentially. This approximation is extremely good. It's this sine c operator can be expressed in terms of the shift, the spectral shift, up to some remnant of order e to minus a omega. So for semi-classical state, for large, thickness large, omega large device, it will be incredibly good. But then, using this operator, we can find the relation between expectation values and dispersions of this in this limiting space and in real LQC. Also, we can compare, we can just notice that if this, at this phi 0, state was sharply fixed about x equal to 0, either with the limit state of the limiting state or LQC state, then this sine Cx over C operator is a good replacement, good approximation for x, and it can be made better by taking higher orders. So instantiation in this situation is defined as interpolation of the initial discrete spectral profile of, say, of the LQC limiting space, LQC limit space, into continuous spectral profile, done in such a way that actions of X operator and this sine Cx over C operator agree for each, all the powers, n equal to 1 and 2. It's quite easy to check that such interpolation exists. We don't need its exact form right now that exists. Alternatively, one can just fix essentially expanding, then see up to some, again, very small corrections. It's a good one. So let's go to the slide 20. Where I would like to present graphically the idea of the scattering picture in this situation, where by red line we represent LQC state. In Wheeler-Levitt case, these are just expectation values plotted, so these are the green lines. So we see that in the process of evolution, we have, for example, in the middle, one Wheeler-Levitt state. Then we have contraction bounds, and then state goes and approaches another Wheeler-Levitt state, by which is denoted here by the upper green line. So the scattering has a little bit non-trivial interpretation then, namely if we take the cycles of the evolution we can consider them like chain transition between a Willer-DeWitt space. We have like three different Willer-DeWitt space plotted here on the plot, and the LQC evolution essentially amounts to transition globally between these Willer-DeWitt space. So the scattering corresponds just to transformation between one Willer-DeWitt space, which for example reaches infinity at pi equal to 1.3, and another one which reaches infinity at say 2.3. So let's go to the slide 29, where I try to exactly write up the meaning of the scattering picture, where this provides the identification of quasi-periodic state of LQC with non-periodic Willer-DeWitt state at given time phi naught. And then one can build a sequence of instantiations at phi n, where phi n corresponds exactly to the points where the wave packet reaches theta equal to pi over 2. So we have set of instantiations at the pure receiver state. Using this, we can write essentially again a transfer operator, or the scattering matrix, transferring the Willer-DeWitt between the Willer-DeWitt states, which are instantiations at phi equal to phi n and phi equal to n plus 1. So we exactly have this picture of scattering of one Willer-DeWitt state into another one. The evolution is given by the sequence of this scattering, which are determined by the instantiation. And then again, this very neat behavior of the spectra allows us to find what is the exact relation between spectral profile of these instantiations, and it's written in terms of psi n only because we constructed instantiations in such a way that interpolation already requires just these points. So we, given these points, we know how to interpolate. And it is essentially transformations, rotations by the deviations of the spectrum from uniformity. This way, we can apply to, again, estimate the dispersion on the operators, which here are represented by the sign C, X over C, ones, up to the term which is case like 1 over z cube. And then if we have large number of cycles, so we can actually neglect this 1 over v cube corrections because they don't accumulate in the process of evolution. So for large number of evolution of the cycles, again, we can estimate the growth of the dispersion by the dispersion of some very nice, very quickly decaying function of omega, which is exponent e to minus a omega over omega. So we see, we can summarize that we successfully extended the scattering picture to the model of positive cosmological constants. Evolution between pure de Sitter epochs is a chain of Willer-DeWitt universes consecutively scattered into one another. The instantiation procedure allows to relate dispersion in compacted pipe volume of the LQC state with its Willer-DeWitt limit at a given moment, phi 0, at its pure de Sitter epoch. And the scattering corresponds to unitary rotation by the remnant or deviation from the uniformity of the spectrum, which decays exponentially. In consequence, the decoherence of the state between large number of pure de Sitter epochs is bounded from above by the dispersion of the operator e to minus I omega over omega, which is infinitesimal for the state fixed about large momentum of the scalar field. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, so we have time for a few questions. We are a little bit late, running late, so maybe a 5 or 10 minutes at most.
So Thomas, can I ask a question? Maybe you mentioned, but I was not able to follow. So in the case when we have lambda greater than zero, can you just summarize the point that just for one cycle, like without going into the cycles coming from the self-adjoint extensions, just between one cycle, what is the inequality between the dispersions at in the contracting and expanding branch, not for a large number of n, just for single n, single n equal to 1?
Just for single one. So instead of n, we just take this exponent. And, well, I have not actually plugged the number, but you can think about, like, for some kind of really large universe, we can take omega equal to, say, 10 to 120. So we see the, what this exponent will be, so how small this number will be.
But your A is arbitrary, right?
Yeah. What is arbitrary?
A, no,
it's not arbitrary. It is some known constant right now, which depends on the value of cosmological constant.
I see.
It involves this F2G elliptical integral.
Yeah.
So it's a concrete function which is known.
Okay, so A is proportional to A is proportional to square root of lambda. And so if you take a large, if you take a universe which has a reasonably large.
No, it's not actually not proportional to square root of lambda. It's as lambda goes to zero, I think it approaches some kind of zero value. It's not like this exponent gets removed. That's not the case.
I think I got confused. Somewhere you introduced A in your slides, which is square root of gamma squared delta lambda by 12 pi g. So.
Ah, okay. No. That's not the same A. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you're saying that for n equal to 1, the same conclusion holds, that it is e to the power minus a omega by omega.
Yes, but we have to remember that to make all of this precise, we have these higher order corrections coming from different sources, from the approximations we took, taking the limit state observables and the limit state dispersions. So we have to take into account that, they might be significant if we take just one cycle. They don't propagate, so they don't increase as we go in further cycles. That's why I can actually analyze the long-term behavior. But if we take just one cycle, we have to also take them into account.
So if this...
And then actually the exponentially suppressed behavior will be just...
So one just naive question. So compared to the case lambda equal to zero, does one get a weaker inequality or a stronger inequality?
We cannot compare it that way, because in lambda equal to zero case we didn't have cycles.
No, I'm just talking about single cycle. I'm not, like, my question is just with n equal to one.
Well, we cannot say so. It's stronger. In this sense, it's stronger because we see that the observable which is involved, so which bounds the potential growth, is like some exponent. So,
okay.
E to per omega, so the dispersion of this operator will be extremely small.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Comments?
Well, I am Francesca from Marseille. I will make a comment and ask eventually Tomas for comment more about this, because I found very exciting this feature of the scattering feature in which you have an initial and final state, and this is very similar to what we do in spin form. So I wonder if Tomas have already talked about comparing this work with the spin form feature.
Well, I don't know whether at this moment whether it's even possible, because what I did here, I just used the fact that I have control over the physical Hilbert space. So I just was able to construct the picture by the direct relations between physical Hilbert spaces. I don't know whether in spin foam approach these spaces were already identified. If yes, then I think one can do some analogous work to build such such scattering.
Definitely, thank you. Okay.
So also, I think the here the scattering is really with respect to intrinsic time, which is really the scalar field phi, and one is mapping the space at phi equal to minus infinity r. Let's talk about lambda equal to zero for just for a second. Then is one is mapping the space at phi equal to minus infinity with space phi equal to infinity, and since there isn't, it will be difficult to compare without a notion of deparameterization or some kind of time in the spin form language, I think. So this S matrix is like more traditional S matrix, where in a deparameterized theory. So it really is kind of going from minus infinity to infinity, not just a finite time interval.
So if we wanted to take an advice from this, if we wanted to compare our spin form cosmology work to what Thomas has done, maybe the next step would be to add matter in order to have such a time.
Yeah, so that would be very good. Or maybe there was a result that I think Thomas mentioned very quickly, which had to do with Bianchi. Oh, is it correct? Some work at Madrid, Bianchi models without a matter field.
Yes, vacuum Bianchi 1.
Yeah, so one could do vacuum Bianchi 1. But again, there was some deparameterization that occurred. And so one might have to, so you could do vacuum, you could do Bianchi models, but then again there is some kind of a deparameterization that is used in Thomas's picture. So it's an interesting problem also that one could just say that, well, okay, Thomas has this picture, but can we translate it into a timeless framework first, which may be quite possible actually, and then it will be much easier to compare with what happens in the spin form picture. So one can approach it both ways, right? One can either generalize spin form picture to have a scalar field or a deparameterization in the Bianchi model, taking one of the geometrical variables as time. Or one could take Thomas's thing and generalize that or recast it in the timeless framework. And I think both of them would be interesting things to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Thomas, let me just quickly go back to a point that I think Param raised a long time ago, which was really in the lambda equal to zero case. If you can go to transparencies, I think it was 15.
Scattering graph?
Yes.
Okay.
So actually, let me see. Let's go to 16 for a second and then go to 15. So on 16,
okay,
at the bottom, you have got sigma minus less than or equal to sigma plus 2 sigma star. And that sigma star involves, which is just defined in line above, it involves the dispersion in K, which is like in G5, right?
Yep.
And now if I go to the graph, if I understand this correctly, your answer to Param, is that in this graph, it does look like you started out, because you're just plotting V here, and dispersions in V. So it looks like in the incoming branch, which is coming in and contracting branch, so to say, right, which is in red, the dispersions are small, and the outgoing branch, the dispersion volume are large. But that is just because, if I again were to go to your slide 16 for a second, that is just because the sigma star is large.
Yes, exactly. I had to build this picture, I had to construct the space which had huge dispersion in the scalar field momentum.
Right. So
it's
completely compatible. Yeah. So it's completely compatible with this bottom equation you have got on slide 16.
Yes.
So that is the universal bound that one has. And then your statement is that, yes, if in fact you allow some state in which sigma star, the dispersion in the momentum is large, then you would have a picture in which the incoming state gets spread out a lot. But if I understand correctly, your viewpoint is that such a state is perhaps not a semi-classical state. Is that the viewpoint?
Can you repeat?
Yeah. So if I did...
No. Just the last sentence.
Okay. So your viewpoint is that pressure state in which sigma star is very large should not be regarded as a semi-classical state. Is that so?
No, because, I mean, they are not semi-classical, because they have huge spread in the degrees of freedom corresponding to matter.
Good. Just want to clarify, because I think there'll be confusion about this point as well. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I just would like to make one more comment about this graph, because I plotted it in the way that the outgoing dispersion of the outgoing packet is larger. But the equation is symmetric with respect to reflection in pi. So we can easily have this solution even in this large non-semi-classical state where the incoming state is not so sharply peaked, but the outgoing one is much sharper peak. I mean, it's just enough to reflect this graph, and it's perfectly correct solution. So that's one thing which I wanted to point out.
Okay, let's thank Thomas again.